Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Tom, what is your favorite camping food out under the stars?
You know what? I think I'm going to go with baked beans. I'm like Jumbo from Blazing Saddles. Love the baked beans. I don't think anyone else who's in my tent will like it, though.
I prefer room service. This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Ornovitz.
And I'm Tom Haverstrow.
Tom, fifth episode, season six, down to 12 chefs. Interesting disparity. Kind of, I feel like there's a large disparity between the championship caliber chefs and sort of the also-rans. It's just, again, it's this weird distortion coming out of the all-star season where I forget the gulf and chasm between the very, very good and the good.
Yeah, there's definitely two tiers here. And I will say that we have not done fantasy scoring this season, and I regret that, deeply regret it. I guess I could retroactively do it because you would see that statistically, that Brian Voltaggio, Michael Voltaggio, Jen Carroll, Mike Isabella, and Kevin Gillespie, I would say, are just far and away in a different class. And this episode was immensely enjoyable for me. I know that you don't like the whole cooking in the snow or cooking in the desert aspect, but this didn't go in the middle where it was like not quite
restrictive and not quite, yeah.
Yeah, you either want to go, hey, here's the challenge, just make the best fucking dish you can make, and then everyone just makes amazing food, right? The cuisine is top notch. Or you go the other direction, and you better have a restriction that makes great TV. And I felt like the commentary in this one, the one-liners, the shot of Ron just sitting by his teepee was like a king. I mean, so many moments I just out loud giggled, and people here. I'm at my cousin's lake house in Tennessee, and so pardon me if the rental house Wi-Fi is no good. But I will say this, Kevin, I really liked this episode, even though the food sucked.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I will say this as a confession: I think this is the week I get eliminated. You know, I was.
I don't even think he'd show up for work.
Yeah, you know, I think I've put in a good couple of weeks. I feel like I had a real puncher's chance at getting through the first 4 weeks. I think this is a brand of adversity. Now, I don't know. I mean, Mateen's ceviche was so disgusting that I might have been able to get by. Like, I think my instinct, and we'll do the quick fire first, but just kind of looking at it, my instinct would have been to kind of go Brian Voltaggio. Like, get a savory protein. Polenta's brilliant, right? You can't fuck that up because it's just going to be in a pot or a skillet, and you can just – it's going to be warm. Mm-hmm. You can't really overcook it. You know, dandelion greens, brilliant. Like he has the smartest strategy.
I know what a dandelion is, but is dandelion greens a thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, as I said, it's a very bitter green. They have these sort of, like they're actually very beautiful greens. Like on the plate, it's one of the best looking greens as opposed to like, you know, collards or Swiss chard. Well, Swiss chard is nice with those little colored stems. But I just think like a braised green, a polenta, right? Like I would maybe be inclined to do like a shrimp sausage and grits, but shrimp kind of freaks me out in the heat. As we saw at the judges' table. But I think this is the week I go home. Tom, I don't like adverse conditions. I don't. I need the kitchen the way I need my kitchen. Like, I'm not a guy who can cook with one arm tied behind my back. I am a control freak. I like to know what my conditions are going to be going in. I need to know. I am a J in the Myers-Briggs scale.
So what about camping?
Oh, screw that. I mean, you know what I love? I love that we now know on this show, because it comes up every time. Yeah, you always have the outliers. I grew up with a Unabomber, so I'm used to this. But by and large, chefs are urban creatures. And even if they're not, they just like the comforts of home. These are not people. Eli's – like, by the way, I've glamped. I think we talked about this. Like, I've glamped my last few trips. I do enjoy, as long as I don't have to haul shit on my back, and as long as someone else does the cooking, and as long as someone else pitches
and this
cleans the place.
But I'm talking to someone who goes to Mongolia for fun.
Yeah, and I stayed in a yurt, and like other people did the shit. Like other people took care of the yurt maintenance.
Is a yurt a Mongolian teepee?
Sort of, kind of. I mean, I think it's much bigger. One thing I did get very good at in Mongolia is they were the only heat is this wood iron stove. And like one of the great measures of pride I have from that trip is you put the log in before you went to bed, and then you'd wake up, because I wake up like 17 times a night to go to the bathroom, about 4.5 hours in, and it's freezing.
Mm.
And you have to put another log on the fire and get that fire going again. And I got pretty damn good at like lighting, like maintaining a wood fire oven for heat. But
caveman large, Kevin, I like caveman Kevin. This sounds like you're feeling like you're in your element a little bit there.
I don't. When I'm camping, I don't want to have to haul shit. I don't want to have to cook shit. I don't want to have to clean shit. And I don't want to have to set up shit. Like I will do the hiking. I will do the sleeping on the ground outdoors. I don't mind. I've even gotten really good at pooping outside. And because your entire, like on a trip like Mongolia or Namibia we did, like your entire perspective, it's amazing when you do camp just how quickly you sort of recalibrate your expectations.
Yes.
So 3 days in, you see this massive boulder and you realize on an open plain. So if you're on the steppe in Mongolia, like it's not like the woods. I mean, if you want to go, you got to like figure out how to obscure yourself. And you just look at a beautiful boulder, you're like, that is the Ritz-Carlton Hotel bathroom of boulders. And like, you get such satisfaction over finding, never mind that you're still doing it outside, never mind you're still squatting. It's just like the sheer fact that you get the satisfaction of, oh, today was a good day. I had this great, like, little grove of trees that I could go. Like, it's so funny how when you're out there, you're so quickly, you're like Tom Hanks in Castaway. It's like you just become one, but I still don't like it. I mean, I still do it just because I can't get anywhere else in the world.
So
there are places you can't get in the world without.
You're vibing with Eli, who said, quote, I don't believe in camping.
Yeah, like I only believe in camping in the sense that I had to get comfortable with it at a certain point when it dawned on me, like I was going to miss seeing parts of the world I wanted to see because I couldn't want it. Because I, and really the camping is as much about the going to the bathroom outside, anxiety too, but like, I just realized I wasn't going to see the Simien Mountains of Ethiopia. Like, I wasn't going to be able to do Mongolia. Like, we wouldn't be able to do Fish River Canyon in Namibia. And so it just, there's no other way to do that other than sleeping in a tent and doing everything outdoors. And I don't enjoy it, but I get a certain pleasure out of, I saw this place and I had to do, that was just a prerequisite.
Yeah. I think it's more, I feel like you ideologically, you were inspired or you kind of got what Michael Voltaggio was saying is like, I'm not cooking for cowboys. I'm cooking my food and hopefully the cowboys like it. And I thought that was a total different mindset than some of the other chefs were like, I was surprised, Kevin, how many of these chefs were like in the roughing it up in their childhood. Like it was one after another. It was like, oh, I lived in the woods. I grew up in the woods. Like I love outhouses. Like that's my thing. And I was like, whoa, I did not expect this. So I coming into this whole episode, didn't expect people to feel like this was where they're going to thrive in this moment. Now, from the beginning, the quickfire challenge was the you had to choose, or the fans could vote on what ingredient they were going to cook with. Apparently,
it was the fans or the chefs?
No, I think it was fans. There was Padma did this little VO, this voiceover, where people on their Sprint phones could text in their vote for either cactus, rattlesnake, or kangaroo. And we had Chef Tim Love, who had apparently opened a Western bistro called Lonesome Dove. And he walks in. He's got the way oversized, looks like he's wearing a bed sheet, buttoned down with the double-breasted pockets, very Texas Western. And they had to do a cactus. Apparently the fans wanted to see cactus on the show. What were your thoughts on that choice?
I was actually surprised. I would imagine that a fan favorite would have been rattlesnake or kangaroo. I'm just kind of shocked that people just – that those are such crowd pleasers. I mean, it's like snakes on a plane, you know? Like who doesn't want to see chefs cook snake? I mean, that's kind of – that's a great visual. I don't need to see them cook cactus. So, you know, it was very funny. Michael Voltaggio had sort of the best shade in the episode. He ended up finishing on the bottom of this quickfire challenge. And Tom, I got to assume it might be his only bottom finish in the history of the show.
I mean, I imagine so.
Unless there's a team thing or something, you know, because he did this, you know, this red cactus coulis and an avocado roll with coconut ceviche, and he was put on the bottom. And, you know, and then when they came to him afterwards, he was basically like, I'd rather work with interesting flavors than take the slime out of cactus. It was sort of his way of saying, congratulations, you performed a stupid human trick. When will I ever use this in the real world? Right. Meanwhile, I'm a great chef. Congratulations, you can take the slime out of cactus. Which one of these is more applicable when we actually start cooking? So it was just funny to see how petulant he was over having to do this very kind of niche task that really doesn't suggest anything about your innovation or the quality of your cooking. I can't say I disagreed with him, but it was really amusing to see him just kind of say these, like, he clearly has very little patience for these stupid human trick chef challenges. He wants to cook, right? He wants to cook in a kitchen in restaurant conditions with a wide array of culinary selections and produce. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, he is absolutely convinced he is the best chef on the planet. And when you start taking away shit from him, it's okay. Well, again, it's the eighth grader doing math. When am I ever going to use this in the real world?
Right. The cactus that Mateen called cactus. I've never eaten cactus. I don't think I have. At least I didn't knowingly. Maybe at some obscure Mexican joint, I just ordered a dish and it had a cactus relish, and I didn't really get that it was cactus. But have you ever prepared or eaten cactus?
I've only prepared it out of the jar. So I mean, many Mexican supermarkets near me, often shop at them, you will see kind of cactus in a jar. No, they use like chipotles in a can, right? Mm-hmm. So I have done it for kind of a fajita mix that I did once, but I've never used fresh cactus, no. But I mean, you'll see it on menus and stuff. There is there's this wonderful Jaliscan place called La Casita in Bell, California. If you ever come to town, it's a great place. They do really regional Jaliscan food, these lovely squash blossoms and these soups, and they do some cactus there, and it is a frequent item on their dish. So I've never cooked with it other than that kind of canned, jarred rather, kind of in the, it almost like pickles, like it was almost like these pickly peppers. But no, I don't.
Yeah. I think what happened with Michael Voltaggio was that I think the chef, the guest chef, Tim Love, I don't think he liked the tweezery dish. I think that's the only thing he didn't like.
Exactly.
And it offended his sensibilities as a Texas lonesome dove chef, Western bistro chef, that I bet it tasted amazing. And I just think the presentation threw him off. And that was the shocker of the season for me, that Michael Voltaggio would finish in the bottom three on any episode. And I think it wasn't about the food. It was about the presentation.
So, I totally agree with you. I got the sense that it was a statement. It was a statement. Like, there's no you can't tell me. And look, again, this is always the problem with the show, is that we'll never be able to taste and talk for ourselves. But I just failed to believe that Voltaggio's, you know, coulis with avocado roll and coconut ceviche was one of the three least appetizing dishes on that. I just don't believe it. I don't believe it. I think this was a populist chef who's got a certain persona. Sort of, you remember like the Italians in the All-Star season with Brian Voltaggio?
Yeah, of course.
Like, there's no soul in your cooking. Like, I think one of the understated qualities of this show, and it's not all chefs, it's not even a majority of the guest chefs, judges. But I think there's often a lot of ideological expression through judging. I think there are these populist chefs who like to, as you say, take down the tweezery crowd. I think, frankly, there's some other way. I think there are times when, you know, really technical chefs come on and sort of turn their nose up at, this was very simple. You know, there's nothing special here.
Basic.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that it's actually something I'm going to start looking for again. Because we've noticed it. Like, you noticed it this week. We noticed it with the Italy All-Star 17. And to the extent to which these guest judge chefs sort of take a little stab, or for that matter, like, pay tribute to someone who kind of speaks their language in a culinary sense.
Yeah. I kind of enjoyed his emotionless, dry, monotone reviews. He just seemed like a very cold person, this guy. And I, like, when he asked Ron, did you have any fun? And Ron's like, yeah, I loved it. This is great. Like, da, da, da. And then he's like, someone else had a dish and he was like, I'm a big fan of tequila.
Right.
And I was like, well, this guy is weird.
Poor Ron. I mean, the six words you do not want to hear from a judge are, the crab tasted rancid in my mouth. like the least appetizing sentence ever uttered on Top
Chef. There were some greatest hits of bad dish reviews here on this episode. I mean, that one might rank maybe top five, but it's there's a lot of those in this episode. And so we had bottom was Michael Voltaggio, Ash was in the bottom, and so
by the way, I feel terrible for Ash. I mean, like, he was gonna do this soap, it was a really good idea. He didn't have the tortilla maker, so it was just this lumpy thing, and it was the saddest look. Like the exchange of expressions, just the eyes said it all. It was like Ash and this judge and Chef Love, kind of a misnomer, and he just gives them this, like, dry grilled cheese that just was the ugliest thing I've seen on the
like
show.
And two, like, baseball mitts.
Oh my God. Exactly. And it's like, I felt for him because I know what he wanted to do. It was a really good idea. I think, like, a cactus melt would have been a great dish, right? Like, the truth is, he probably should have just gone with regular bread and just done a yummy, yummy cactus melt. With oozing cheese, like, that would have been a really great, with a little dipping sauce, you know, like with an achiote dipping sauce on the side. Like, that would have been a really good quick fire challenge with cactus.
Yeah. Ron says, back in Haiti, that the cactus are poisonous. I didn't know that there were poisonous cactus, but I'd imagine, or cacti, but I'd imagine you don't want to fuck with that cactus multiple ways.
Yeah. No, I would assume so as well. So what,
on the top, you had Mike Isabella wins this one. Anything, stand out to you on his dish? I mean, he clearly from the beginning, the editors, you know, wanted you to know that Isabella knew what he was doing.
Yeah, I think it's the old who highlighted the dish you know, who highlighted the ingredient rather. Like that's always the thing. And the winning chef is the chef that most that paid the most respect to the ingredient, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of the conventions of the show. I actually was surprised that not Laureen, just because her cactus was only in a salsa and, you know, was actually a member of the top. It looked like a great dish, but I'm always – it just seems like one of the great conventions of the show is you have to highlight the ingredient. And, like, Isabella did that. I mean, cactus ceviche, you're hanging it out there. I mean, you're basically saying, like, here is the ingredient and it's in its nakedness. I'm going to do it. And I kind of much respect.
He said, for those who want to cook cactus at home, he said the way you do it is you got to cure it. So he does the ceviche. He wins. Mike Isabella is on the board. But I want to highlight here a quote from Ash, who I think is my favorite contestant on the show. Ash says, "We're all great chefs. But are we great innovators?" And I loved it. I was like, ooh. So this is kind of where we get into the elimination challenges. Are we great innovators? The show, the whole premise of Top Chef is you get all these great chefs in a room, but you have these challenges and you have to innovate. And in this instance, oh man, necessity is the mother of invention. Is that
necessity
right?
Necessity is the mother of invention. That is correct.
So here we are. You're in the camping. You're in the on a ranch, a dust pile, in the middle of nowhere, Nevada. It's a billion degrees out. You're living in teepees. And so now you got to innovate, Kevin.
Right. So they get four fire pits and some cast iron pans and a little lean-to. It was interesting, as you said, like, it turns out Robin grew up in the Mountain West and did some kind of Outward Bound thing. And Mateen grew up on a Basque country farm. And Ashley grew up with a Unabomber. Ron is using voodoo to ward off snakes, which was amusing. And Voltaggio, Michael just absolutely says this is an away game. What was funny about this to me, Tom, is like every once in a while Top Chef gives away the game. Like – they're making it out like you're going to cook for 20 combatants at Ruby Ridge, right? Like the guy who's defending his land from the feds in Oregon. Like you think – and then it comes in like – meanwhile, ooh, the red bog and polenta is really good. Like you start going to these guys and they sound like me. It's just – so it's just kind of funny. Like you're going to cook for, you know, people who skin – other men for a living.
Yeah. Did you catch the guy who goes, the bearded guy who kind of looked like that poker player with the sunglasses and the cowboy hat? And he's like, I'm not sure what this is, but I like the tequila.
And right. Like he was the one guy, but everybody, all these other cowboys, like were about to like get a table at Chez Panisse or something. Like they, like the idea that these are rugged individualists, you know? So
wait, did you catch just another thing on the guests. Did you catch the dude who wore a belt over his shirt?
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep, free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodles is like, ah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Like a girdle? Like, what do you mean?
There's a guy.
Like the 80s?
Like, there's a guy who was wearing, like, your classic cowboy button-down with the double-breasted pockets, right? And he had, like, this thick-ass belt around his hips, but it was the shirt was tucked in to his belt. It had a huge belt buckle. I caught one of the belt buckles, had a Ford logo on it. I mean, this was where do you think Bravo got these folks?
That's what I want to know. Like, how do you
What's
recruit
a casting
the
call for the 12?
I think 20- it is. Like, it turns out these are, you know what? These are like dancers in a Vegas show who they just outfitted in Western wear.
That's your theory?
Maybe. I don't know. Like, how did they find us? I mean, who were the diners in Louisville, in Lexington, rather?
I think they're like friends of the producers of the show or like friends of the staff.
Like food scene people from Lexington and Louisville.
Yeah. And yeah. But where do you find 24 Cowboys if you're Bravo?
I don't know. It's sort of counter programming for them.
And when they're yeah. running, when they're walking in, I'm just expecting.
But when he started talking about the Rutabaga, I was just like, oh my God, this is not your mother's cowboy.
So, no, no.
But so anyway, yeah, it's a deprivation challenge, as I like to call them. This is, you've got four fire pits. It was interesting to see people who trusted the process. And then can we just say one thing? I mean, Tom, how many times on this show, and granted it's only season six and we're informed by another whole decade worth of programming, but like, when is raw fish in 110 degrees ever a good, has ceviche ever won outdoors, Tom?
No.
Like who is, and yet you can see it from a mile away. Who does ceviche in the 110 degree heat? I don't care how refreshing you think it's going to be. I feel like how many raw fish losers have we had like being bumped from the competition in heat situations?
But like, I feel like it's a cop out dish. Let's be honest. It's a cop out dish because
you're afraid of the fire.
You're afraid of any. So if the strategy is, if you have a great unknown about how this kitchen is going to look, just avoid the kitchen altogether. Do a ceviche, and then you don't have to fuck with a stove. You don't have to fuck with a fire pit. You don't have to do any of that. And so when the multiple people are doing a ceviche, I feel like it's a, hey, what can I do that completely avoids the big variable?
I thought Kevin did a dish that was smart in terms of the duck breast, because, you know, you can render that fat. You can – I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, you need to – do the fire gradually, but his tequila, I was actually shocked given their reaction that he wasn't on the top three, because he did the duck breast with the mole and the cold salad of tequila marinated watermelon, which our cowboy liked.
You're right.
And it's just like they were swooning over it, and then he wasn't on the top. I was just very confused by that. I got to assume he was a strong fourth. But yeah, it is. Those are people who are afraid of the fire. To a lesser extent, Eli was. You know, it was, you know, they didn't like Isabella's pork
Gyro. Kevin?
I'm a Euro guy. I'm sorry. Yeah, I almost did it. Yeah.
Kevin. What? You almost did it, but you didn't do it. You know who did do it?
I was at Euro, so I was going to fuck it up both ways.
You know who did do it, though?
Who?
Mike Isabella. Called it a pork gyro. He called... This is a guy, Kevin, who apparently is known for his Greek cooking.
His Greekness? By the way, that restaurant's good. I've been to that restaurant.
Kevin, it's not a gyro, and you don't put shrimp and chickpeas in a Greek salad. Who, like... First of all,
you're blowing the lid off this. He is not. He's about as Greek as a Kardashian. Like, there's nothing Greek about him.
There isn't, and he claims that he's all about authentic Greek cuisine, and yet he's calling it a gyro. Okay, it's not a gyro. It's a gyro, and the G is silent. Like George in Greek is Yorgos, right? Like the G right there in the beginning is a Y, right? That's the same with a gyro, okay? Now, on this dish, you're going to do a gyro, and it's just bland. It's just pork and then the pita and lettuce and tomato, and then he got a tzatziki where he, you know, he put that
tzatziki
together.
Tzatziki looked good. I like the idea of apple and fennel in a tzatziki. Sure, I know you're not a fennel guy.
I'm not a fennel guy, but but you know what? The judges called it for what it is. It was a very average dish. There was nothing interesting about it. Maybe the apple fennel was a little bit of a twist, right? But you know what? Get all the way the F out of here with your Greek salad and your fake Greek salad and your fake gyro. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Not his best moments. By the way, bacon's supposed to make everything better, but for the second time in 3 or 4 weeks, someone gets dinged for too much bacon. Ash with his chicken paillard with corn succotash, too much bacon grease. So
sometimes you can't spray enough vanilla. Like sometimes the vanilla air freshener just can't get rid of the smell, and that's the problem with these dishes.
We have a lot of bathroom humor on this show.
Well, like you can't hide the fact that you have a terrible dish by just sprinkling some bacon bits on there. Now,
I don't think his dish was terrible. I think it was just. And succotash didn't look – I think it was just like a little too bacon greasy.
Oh, true. Yeah. That one aside. Ash, that was fine. But look, you got Ron. You got Mateen doing the ceviche. And you know what's funny about this episode? Was Jen Carroll even there? For such a big personality.
Kind of bye week.
She just was kind of just a standby.
I just love her food, Tom. Like snapper with cold duck confit salad, daikons, carrots, and tomato water. Like I just want to eat her food. Like that's what I order at 110. Like if that was the menu. All right, let's do this, Tom. It's 110 degrees. It's a hot day. You're eating hot outside. Which of those dishes are you ordering? Not knowing if they're any good. So you're not informed by the judge's comments. You just see ceviche three ways with a margarita. Coconut lime ceviche with an island mojito, a shiitake dashi with a black cod, with some ponzu, the romaine salad with the drunken prawns and southwestern sausage. Like, by the way, sounds like something you might want on a hot day. A little shrimp, a little savory, but still a salad. I mean, what of those dishes would you have ordered?
I'm choosing between Kevin's duck breast, the grilled dandelion with oyster mushrooms, pork loin from Brian Voltaggio. The dashi is kind of out of left field. I respect it, and we'll talk about it later. But I'm probably going to go with Kevin's.
Yeah, I'm giving myself away here, just it's because there's so many. Like the Voltaggio shiitake dashi with black cod and and Jen Carroll's snapper with cold duck confit salad. By the way, can I tell you how often we've been doing duck confit?
Oh, no.
This quarantine. So, Tom, it is a game changer in this house. I found this farm in Pennsylvania that ships duck. So I've always wanted to do duck, right? But it's intimidating as hell. Like, it's not like you can just throw duck on the grill or something, right? And so I got the quarters for confit and I got the duck breast. To make a long story short, Tom, I am now making duck for us twice a week and I do it two ways. And when you learn how ridiculously easy it is, Tom, like – I'm talking easier than Kraft macaroni and cheese.
I need easy when there are two kids.
Tom, this is how easy confit is. You take the duck quarter, you salt the hell out of it, you put it in some kind of Pyrex or Dutch oven dish that is exactly its size, so it's very snug. You turn on the oven for 2 hours. You turn off the oven. You let it rest. There is your confit. like an absolute orangutan could make Don't Comfy. I mean, maybe not A-plus level, but A-minus level Don't Comfy. I do a little plum compote with it because it's kind of fatty and rich. It's a game changer, Tom. I might send you some duck.
Ooh, I would love that.
Send you some duck. And the breasts are kind of easy. Like, you just have to watch. You have to render the fat, which is the toughest part. But really, it's like a 10-12 minute cook. And then you just let it rest. Like, I didn't know duck was this easy. But when I heard, like, I'm going to do a duck confit salad now. Because it never even occurred to me.
That one would be hard to top. I'm probably still going with the mullet, the duck breast here from Kevin. But you know what I'm not doing?
What are you not doing?
I'm not doing the cod ceviche. We have buried the lead here, Kevin. Tom Colicchio just spat out a dish on Top Chef. This is a top five moment in Top Chef history. And, it, you know, when we see it happen, there are so many car crashes on this episode that it might get a little bit buried here. But it was so bad that he had to spit it out. And it's just so hard to imagine a guy who's eaten everything under the sky. A dish could be so bad that he'd have to spit it out. And then we hear that Chef Tim Love, out on the judges' table, said that Mateen's dish made him ill. So how bad was this
dish? By the way, do we think that's true?
He's not out there. He's not sweating. He's not out there if he's feeling ill. Like, maybe he's just – I think he's hyperbolizing.
For effect.
Yeah.
So you're now convincing me. Maybe I don't get eliminated because I'm doing a ribeye with some – you know, I thought about, like, the shrimp and grits. That's a bad idea. I'm doing the ribeye with, like, a farro salad, some feta, maybe, you know, throw some greens in, you know, just I'm doing a ribeye and a farro salad.
So you're not avoiding the grill. You're going to stick by the grill, but you just kind of sear it. You don't have to sit.
Farro's tough because do I have a pot or only a pan? Like, the farro I have to get the texture right. But I think that's what I'm doing, a ribeye and a farro salad, because you can do the ribeye. You can figure out the ribeye, you know?
Yeah. No, you know what? You know what's funny is that I don't think many people even did steak, did they? Did anyone do steak?
I'm kind of shocked they didn't. Like, no one thought just to do a hanger steak or...
Is it a matter of overthinking it? Like, people are like, oh, you can't go steak and potatoes here, so I'm going to go with a ceviche in 115 degree weather. So Mateen just does that dish, and look, it didn't work. Tom spit it out. I think someone else said it was disgusting. But I want to talk about Ron here.
Yeah.
Ron does, the ceviche, the coconut lime ceviche, and then the, was it a tequila drink? Coconut tequila?
No,
drink?
It was an island mojito.
And he bombed that. Kevin, it is the curse of the duo. Just stick to one dish, right?
Exactly. And he wouldn't have been on the bottom. I think they thought his ceviche was passable. I think you probably are looking at maybe Eli on the bottom for his radish salad and tuna sandwich, I would imagine, if Ron doesn't kind of screw the pooch on the mojito. I'm with you. And by the way, like, the extra cocktail, unless you're a Voltaggio, just never works.
And Kevin,
the accompanying cocktail never works. You know, you're not a mixologist. Just, you're a chef.
Not only that, he doesn't drink.
He doesn't drink.
So how is he going to know if it tastes good or if it works? You know, like, it's not worth the squeeze here. Is he's reaching for a cocktail because it sounds like a good idea in 120 degree heat, but he can't taste it, or he doesn't drink, so he doesn't really understand. Maybe he did taste it, and it's just he doesn't like drinking, and he will. But I just think this was a poor decision, and if it weren't for Mateen, I think he would have been sent home, because this was – you don't do a cocktail on this dish if it doesn't require it. And if you do a cocktail, make sure you nail it. Make sure you know what you're doing. And it was called cocktail is terrible. Padma said it's disgusting. And that wasn't even a dish that he needed to make. So what? The upside just isn't there.
Yeah. The drunken shrimp, which is apparently tasted like chlorine. So I don't know enough about – I feel like drunken shrimp is sort of like what is it? It's just like kind of marinated in wine or some kind of liqueur. So it's not like really cooked all that much. I need to read up on drunken shrimp to know what she screwed up on. I don't think it's just like shrimp stir fry. I should know this because I love Chinese food.
The quote from Chef Love, Kevin, was, "Tastes like I sucked on a piece of chlorine." Now, I'm not the smartest guy on the planet, but how do you suck on a piece of chlorine? What was that sentence? Like, I get that he's trying to say it tasted like chlorine, but he sucked on a piece of chlorine. I'd like to see what a piece of – it was a very bad dish, the drunken shrimp, but sucking on a piece of chlorine is one of the great lines of Top Chef where it just makes you go, huh, what? I get where you're trying to go for, but what? Now – I guess, did she just marinate the shrimp in tequila?
Yeah, I mean, it's normally wine. Like, I have to say, as somebody who spends 2 hours a week in a chlorinated pool, I've never seen a piece of chlorine. however, I apparently always smell like chlorine, which is kind of funny. This is my new fragrance. I think drunk, and someone will, a viewer will have, or a listener rather, will have to write in. I believe you sort of marinate it in wine or a liquor of some kind before you stir fry it. I should know this because I love Chinese food. But in any event, it just, she has trouble. And again, I think Tom mentioned this, that she has trouble assembling dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. She has trouble kind of tying the bow. It's these various component parts. There's nothing really unified about it. You know, I actually love the idea of like grilled romaine. Like I love like charred wood romaine. Fired yeah. romaine. Yeah. yeah. Like it's something I love, like a Caesar that's done that. Our friend Henry Abbott, there's a wonderful little neighborhood restaurant in his town in New Jersey. And they do like my absolute favorite charred romaine salad. I would go there just for that salad, and it was just amazing. So that's, she actually had a good idea.
Yeah.
But like, why not?
I might order
go
that
with
dish.
Like a chicken Caesar, a Southwestern chicken Caesar.
I might
with
do that
a
dish.
Charred romaine.
Yeah,
yeah.
I might do that like, dish. It reminds me, what was it last season when I think it might have been Chef Melissa did like a salad and just nailed it, and won the dish, won the quick fire or whatever. You don't have to do 8 different things, and especially when you're at the judges' table, don't say, hey, I was inspired by ribeyes or steaks, and so I did shrimp and something else. Like, doesn't make much sense. So she also has ideas in her head, but it never really comes together.
I mean, I think people think shrimp is easier than it is to, like, get right. And yet the number of times on this show across all seasons we hear shrimp is either overdone or underdone is testament to the fact that it is actually much harder. She would have been better off doing the steak. Like, she could have done a Southwestern steak Caesar with like a cool funky salsa, charred romaine. That would have been a great dish for this milieu. It would have been fantastic. She's just really lousy at unifying a dish.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's a time constraint. I mean, she obviously can cook. On the winning side, Ashley gets on the board very happy.
Really happy. Yeah.
You know, what is it? Kind of a deconstructed halibut club sandwich.
I grew up on club sandwiches. Like, I love club sandwiches as a kid. Every time, like, we would open up a menu at a restaurant when I was a kid, and I would search and search. I'd flip the pages or just look on the page looking for a club sandwich. And it was like Steph Curry at the free throw line. I was 92% odds of choosing the club sandwich. So I was a big fan of Ashley's dish.
This is good to know. I've ever hosted you for lunch.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it just means I like bacon.
Michael Voltaggio, I love his dish. Oh, I love, you know, it's funny. He was just like, screw it. I'm making my food and I don't care if it ain't Western. He doesn't do shtick. He's not going to play.
Here's the line. I don't necessarily change the way I cook based on who I'm cooking for. Cowboys are cowboys, but I'm not cooking for cowboys. You don't cook. Essentially what he was saying is the customer isn't always right.
No.
And that's an interesting, you know, for someone who, like, the Top Chef ethos is you have to do the challenge. He's like, no, I'm not going to think about the customer. I'm going to think about the challenge in terms of I have to create a really good dish in these circumstances, in this environment, but I don't give an F who's eating my food. And I kind of love that.
Do you know what I was thinking about the other day?
What?
I found myself daydreaming about Michael Voltaggio's egg yolk gnocchi from Inc.
Mm.
Those silky little, like, jewels. They are, I mean, it is one of the more decadent, amazing textured food in this city the last 10 years. This is one of my favorite dishes.
So when he does
a, I would order two.
When he does a dashi, Kevin, in this, were you just nodding your head like, yes? Were you just like Jack Nicholson in The Departed where you're like, yes, oh, Michael Voltaggio?
That little meme.
Yes.
Of him like nodding.
Yes. Was like that a, you
like
at
a
home?
Psychopath. I started trying to fool around with dashi. I got the bonito and I got the kelp. And I want to kind of, you know what is funny? I stopped eating pork, but like I wanted to do the bacon dashi. Because I think that would have been really good. But I just love, and also I love black cod. I make it a lot here because he's absolutely right. It's fatty. Like I can't, it's the fish I can't screw up. Because it's just so forgiving because it's so yummy and fatty. So we do the miso black cod from Nobu here a lot. And I finally perfected it with the broiler. I just love that he did that. I love that he said, fuck you and your little gimmicky challenges.
And
like, yeah.
And Laureen does the Arctic char, Kevin.
Looked good.
Looked really good. I was. Good. I'm with you, man. I was surprised Kevin wasn't out on the top here. Just like Jen, it seemed like Kev just wasn't on this episode. It was just, you know, you didn't get a lot of Kevin on this episode, but Laureen gets in the top, Ashley gets to the top. So two contestants who have been in the bottom quite a bit on this season are in the top. And then of course, who else is there but Brian Voltaggio and Michael Voltaggio? It is insane how good these two chefs are.
Yeah. We got to chase a Voltaggio because I'd like to know what Michael's up to. It is again, Inc's closing down was one of the more disappointing culinary closures. Although I have to say, like after he and Mylin kind of left, it did fall off a little bit. She has a great place called Nightshade that I hope will reopen when everything reopens. I mean, as we've talked about, I'm kind of terrified for the industry right now. What was the season six preview or rather episode six preview?
Well, let's figure out the bottom three here real quick. Let's touch on this. So Robin Mateen gets eliminated. Mateen, you know, you can't, when someone spits out one of your dishes or one of your elements on your dish, it's never a good sign. And you know, I think Ron did the duo, which is always a bad idea. Robin just couldn't put together, you know, a cohesive dish. But Mateen goes home, and I've tried to look up what Mateen is doing right now, and I didn't have much success. Kevin, did you like he did open up a restaurant, I believe, and then it shut down. I read a bio that said he still talks to Hector and Ron from the show, which is really adorable. I like that. What is it?
Is he? I'm looking at his Twitter feed now. Let me see. Did you? He's doing some. He lives in Portland. It looks like he lives in Portland. And he likes. I don't know. He likes butterscotch pudding. Is this his daughter? I think his daughter might be a kid cook. On I don't know. I want to say that. I really don't want to say that.
He has. Oh, okay. I'm on his Instagram now. Oh, lots of family. It's great. Okay. He's at Mateen Way. At Mateen, MATTINWAY. It looks like he's in his bio on Instagram says he's set your cash flow on autopilot, real estate, crypto, and e-commerce. Ooh.
Crypto. He and Spencer Dinwiddie.
He and Spencer. I don't know what he's doing on the food side, but it looks like he's still in, he's in Portland, which is pretty cool.
Good food city.
So Chef Mateen, there's a picture. Oh, February 17th picture. Look who I run into in Portland, hashtag Portland, Oregon. It's him with Gregory, Chef Gregory.
Oh, no kidding. The top chef Portland contingent.
Yeah.
There you go. I like Basque food would be fun. There's a huge Basque community in Bakersfield, California, not far from here, and that has some Basque restaurants. And we always talk about we were going to get a golden retriever from Bakersfield, but they did not have. We were denied. They were not enough males in the litter.
Whoa! So all right. Well, we'll have to talk about that off air, Kevin, because I want to get the full update. February 7th, Mateen has a picture with Ron, Chef Ron. This is great. So 10, 11 years down the road, whatever it is, he and Ron are still hanging out, which is really, really cool. So shouts to Chef Mateen, who was who had the apple of the eyes in your household there, Kevin. You like Chef Mateen?
Like, he, you know, he's a reasonably attractive Frenchman. Okay. Or Basqueman. But couldn't, you know, just never got any momentum. Was kind of disappointed. I mean, to bomb the French cook and then the outdoor when you grew up on a farm. I don't know. I just, it showed a lack of confidence. I think when you try to avoid the fire, you got to jump into the fire.
Kevin, let's do our final thoughts here.
The Voltaggio intransigence, which was so appealing to me, first to just drag the stupid cactus challenge and say, I'm here to cook good tasting food, not to do menial tasks, stupid human tricks like desliming cactus. And then to turn right back around and say, I'm not cooking for your central casting cowboys. I'm here to make food for eaters and diners and let the chips fall where they may. I mean, I think it's fair to say he finished a strong second, maybe third. But I just love that he just isn't having it. He doesn't care for gimmickry, Tom. He is here to cook innovative food, as Ash would say, and he's going to do it his way.
Yeah, he's an innovator. He's not just a great chef. So bid farewell to Mateen. It was fun. It was fun to see your red bandana scarf thing on the show. And happy birthday to you. That was a lot of fun to see you drunkenly jump into pools and hot tubs and stuff a couple weeks ago. So Mateen, it was great having you on the show. And now it starts to get really serious from here on out. There hasn't been a shocker of someone being sent home. I think everyone so far, you get it. Maybe Hector is probably the best chef that has been sent home so far. And I wish he was still around, but yeah. Another episode in the book, season 6, Las Vegas, and we got to see Tom Colicchio spit out a black cod, raw black cod.
For Tom Havistro, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.